session number 19055, Reel 4.
Reel 4. Yes, I wanted to get back to UK because by that time I think I'd been abroad for over 2 years and I was 23, and I thought it was about time I asked my fiancé to marry me. I had done, but our parents both said, oh, we're too young. So that was in way back in 1941, and they were quite right, we were too young. And so I elected to come home, and I did. And then I had to go to a medical because they thought we were all mad or ill, which we weren't by any means. And I remember having a row with the matron at the hospital in Aldershot, because we'd been made to go to bed and there was nothing wrong with us by that time. Wounds had all healed and that kind of stuff. And I eventually went up to the commandant and knocked on his door. And he was a World War I chap, and he said, come in, and I what's the matter? And I told him that we'd been made to go to bed, and I'd been in the hospital for 4 days, and I had a month's leave, and I was losing it, part of my leave. And not only me, but there were about 12 other chaps, ex-POWs, in this ward, with this dreadful woman who was a matron. And he said, oh, we'll soon fix that. And off we all went. We were all discharged that day as being completely fit and not nutters up here. So that was that. Then I finished my leave. By that time, I had been in touch with Bucky Buchanan, who had escaped after me and actually got down to the lines and had rejoined the 2nd Battalion in Italy when they were in Italy. And he was then the IO. And I'd met an officer in London who was wearing a yellow lanyard, and I said, are you 2nd Battalion? Yes. And so he had told John that I was home, and John Frost rang me up and said, Dennis, we want you back. And I said, yes, sure, I'll come, but I do want to have my leave, you know. I've been away for 2.5 years, a lot of what it is. Oh, yes, well, that's all right. Now, Bucky had told me on the telephone that they had been briefed for various operations, and what they were coming up to was Arnhem, of course. And by my leave didn't finish before Arnhem, and we saw them go, all the aircraft going over Bognor, where I was home with my parents. And Bucky went with them, and he was killed at Arnhem, sadly. And I've subsequently been back twice to visit his grave. But when I came back to the battalion, there was nothing left of it except the people that John Frost didn't want to take. It was absolute shambles. The quartermaster was there, who was a very good chap, friend of mine, Jackie Parker, and so I made myself adjutant. There was no one there. And then, of course, we've had this disaster. They were all in the bag or dead at Arnhem. And so a new commanding officer came, John Marshall, who I knew very well, who'd been an early parachutist and been in the battalion before. And eventually he said, Dennis, I think you ought to go back to a company and you ought to eventually command a company. So I said, oh, okay, fine. So Tony Franks took over as adjutant. He'd come back, escaped from Arnhem. One of the few chaps that escaped was a chap called Tatum Water, the second in command, Digby Tatum Water. And they'd come across the river at night in a very good escape. Shand Hackett eventually came back too. Do you know about his story?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, and several other people. Lathbury came back too, yes. So there we are. And then the war finished. We were supposed to go to Denmark, then we were going to Norway, but we didn't go anywhere. The 3rd Battalion went, and I believe the 1st Battalion went to Norway, but the 2nd Battalion didn't go anywhere. And so there we were, really a bit fed up. The war in the Far East was still going on. And I was suddenly told by John Marshall that I was to take the company down, which was then C Company. I went to C Company. Bob Sheridan was the company commander. And take it down to form 5 Parabrigade Defence Company, which for the Far East establishment, instead of a defence platoon at brigade headquarters, you had a defence company. And it was to be 5 Power Brigade, which was to go, which was commanded by Aubrey Coate. No, not Aubrey Coate, by the poet, Nigel Poet, Brigadier Nigel Poet. And so I took C Company down, what was left of C Company, all the high national service numbers, plus one or two regulars, and off we went down to Bulford again, where we were in our old barracks. Then we went out to India, where we formed up, and the defence company consisted of 3 platoons and a company headquarters. We had 2 3 tonners, and I can't remember how many, 4 or 5 30 hundredweights, and I think 6 jeeps. So we were quite a little self-contained outfit. And eventually we had to go to Java, because we did a landing at Morib. That was quite amusing. The ship we went up from Bombay on was the Reina del Pacifico. And we had an amusing run up there. War over, of course, but there were still mines to bother about. And we were going to do this assault landing on a beach at Malacca called Morib. And we had a lot of transport with us in LCTs and that kind of thing. And they first of all went ashore, and they ran into a shingle bank, and all the vehicles went down the ramps and straight into about 40 feet of water, and were all horribly drowned. Well, the soldiers all got wet in landing, and when they landed, they lost all their kit and God knows what else, and it poured with rain, and they then came back onto the ships because the whole thing was cancelled. And I didn't go because I had been made by the brigadier, my old poet, the baggage officer. And I had all the officer's baggage on the main deck. And they'd all bought these wonderful leather suitcases in India, which weren't leather. They turned out to be cardboard. And when they came back and they went to lift the handle, only the handles came up. And so I got a hell of a rocket from the brigadier for not covering with a tarpaulin. I don't think the tarpaulin would have made any difference, but I didn't have enough time to do that. That's why I didn't go on the landing in Morib, and I stayed on the ship, and I was delighted. However, we then went back, we went down to Singapore, where we settled. I went up to brigade headquarters, and myself, we went to... can't remember, but I Bonavista Road, yes, Bonavista Road, which is a lovely place going out to the racetrack. We started to police the place, then we were suddenly sent off to Java to bring out these Rapwe people. And we did a bit of fighting in Java, not very much, and not one very strong opposition. They were the Javanese themselves, who were the Sukarno was the chap who was the chap, and I actually arrested him on one occasion. We were ordered to go to the Governor General's palace, climbed over the walls at 7 o'clock in the morning. And we arrested him in bed with the most beautiful woman. and he, I don't know what happened to him eventually, because he was never tried as a war criminal or anything like that. But the Dutch took over from us, and so it became a kind of Dutch colony again. But of course, eventually they were thrown out, and they didn't like the Dutch very much, the Indos. But the Chinese who were there were very, very hardworking. The Indonesians were not. And I thought the way the Dutch had colonized Java was very good. They had no colour bar, for instance, and many of them had these lovely wives. What did they call them? I can't remember. Beautiful women. And they went into all the clubs. There was no colour bar at all there. So I was impressed with what I saw in Java, but I wasn't impressed with the Indonesians themselves, who were lazy people. I suppose too much sun. Never mind. We came back from...
Could I ask you about the arrest of Sukarno?
Oh, yes.
Whereabouts is that?
Well, that was at the late Dutch Governor General's palace, and he'd gone into there.
Is this in Bandung?
No, this was... wait a minute. It's called...
Batavia.
It was Batavia in those days, but it's now called something else. Can't remember. Anyway, yes, that was there, Batavia.
How did he behave when he was arrested?
Oh, perfectly well, perfectly amenable. Yes, I mean, there were about 20 of us in the room. And his staff were picked up too, a whole lot. But then I think they were let out again because he became active in politics after the Dutch had given up again, I think. Or his son was it who took over, I don't know. Bit like Orbu Hoor, but I don't know. Not a nice man, I don't think. Anyway.
What did the fighting consist of as far as...
Oh, this was... We used to search kampons for terrorists and arms. And occasionally you would find some and say there'd be a bit of a firefight, not very much. Normally these people would get away because they simply throw their weapons, if they had automatics, into the water, and they'd just have an ordinary sarong like the others. You didn't know one from the other. So when they were rioting, then you could arrest them, you know, in the same way as we do in Ireland. But it was very difficult when you searched a kampon because they had this kind of... radio, it isn't radio, but it's word of mouth through where the cordon is coming, and people are going round you and back. And so it's very difficult in those kampons. So
which unit were you with in Java?
That was a 5 Power Brigade Defence Company, and we worked with the Independent Company, 22nd Independent Company. And when that was finished, we were then both disbanded. Both the companies were disbanded, the 22nd Independent Company and 5 Para Brigade Defence Company were disbanded in Java itself, in a place called Semarang. And I was then posted to the 13th Battalion.
What year and month were you in Java?
Well, that must have been 1945-46. I came home in 46, in December or November 46, so must have been 46. And then we went back to Malaya from Java, and the whole thing eventually, 5 Brigade, and Poet left, and Ken Darling took over. And we went back to Malaya, and from there went back to the Middle East, most of which to serve in Palestine. But I only did a short time in Palestine and then came home in November 46.
How long did you do in Palestine?
I was there for 4 days. Because I was coming back to be Roy Urquhart's ADC. I was a bit old by that time, I was nearly 25 at any rate. Anyway, when I saw Pam, who I knew, she said, "Really, Dennis, you know, we don't want a married ADC, do we?" And I said, "No, quite right." So I had to become the staff captain in that new division we were forming in Duke of York's. So that brought us up to 47, when we were married in March 47. And then I finished with 16 Airborne Div in, I think, late 48 or early 49, and went back to the Middlesex Regiment, who were, as I told you, in Chelsea Barracks guarding the Monarch. And then we went out to Hong Kong in 49, and Mary came out in 50, I think, as an illegal wife, but we managed to sort that out. And then we went up to Korea, I think, in August 50, was it? August 50 or July 50?
Yes, I think it was August 1950.
August 50, I think.
Now, can we go into the Korean War in detail, please?
Well, yes. My part in it was pretty small because... I'll tell you the story. Okay. I was commanding A Company. Fellow company commanders were John Willoughby, a very, very experienced chap and very nice man. Peter Allen and Amar Clayton. We only had 3 fighting companies and a headquarter company. We did have a second company come up with reinforcements, which weren't MX chaps at all. They were Queen's men. After we'd been there about a month, I think. And that company commander, his name was Flavel. No, Favel, not Flavel. Favel. And he was very, quite badly wounded pretty early on. So I don't know who... John Shipster took it over. Right, we got there. We went up, I think, at 9 days' notice. In fact, I was reading a letter from Andrew Mann only last night, hoping to kind of bang up on a few things for you, in which he said we actually went up in 9 days from the time we were told that you've got to go. And that was quite interesting. We were having a swimming gala in the Portuguese pool, which no longer exists, which was onto the harbour just by the original Hong Kong club, against the local volunteers, of which we always supplied the PSIs for it. And we were all dressed up in number one dress and that kind of ridiculous stuff, or mess kit. And there we were. And suddenly someone came out to the commanding officer, whispered to Andrew Mann, and Andrew departed. And we went on. We went back to having a jolly good time. And he came back and said, having a company commander's conference at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Well, that meant I had to go up there because we were right at the frontier. You know, I couldn't go to our flat. And Mary had to take her home and had to go back in order to get to that conference. And Andrew said, we're going to Korea. And we take this blah, 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 and how we did it. So we planned it all then. And we then went up on the Unicorn, the carrier. She was not an operational carrier. She was a repair carrier. But we got all our transport on board and that kind of thing. And I think we had some of brigade headquarters with us. The Argyles went up on the Ceylon, was it? The cruiser. Probably the Ceylon. I can't remember. And we went to Busan. And I think that took us 3 days to get up or 4 days to get up. I can't remember. And we were welcomed by a Korean choir singing God Save the King, which was dreadful. And then the Argyle's pipe started up, because the cruiser was behind us. And that put some joy into it. And then we had an American jazz band, which was very good. And then we were taken into a kind of river, what had been a river, the base of a river, all big stones. And we were left there for 2 days to have our jabs and things like that. Now, jabs in the American Army are done by NCOs. They're not by medical officers, you know, as we have them. And I remember saying to the chap who was doing it, a corporal, what's this for? He said, this is for lacking moral fibre. So I said, good God, that's what the RAF have if they don't go on ops and things like that. He said, yeah, well, it's in case they don't want you to run away. So I said, oh, really? That's it. I had that. We all had to have no runaway jab. All kinds of things we had, jabs. And then we went off to take over the line the next day, take over the line from an American outfit. And we only had three companies, and we had 6 miles of river, of the Nak Thong, to defend. And that was very, very difficult to do with three companies. And the fourth company was the headquarter company, and they're doing all the admin, so it was very difficult. And one of my subalterns, Geoffrey Bucknell, he left me commanding one platoon A company and went to be the IO. And Geoffrey was very like myself as a young officer. He was an impatient kind of chap, always wanted to get out and see things. And he went off on a patrol by himself, stupidly, down to the river one day. And he never came back. And it wasn't until long after that we found his body, when we were way up near the Chinese border. And, you know, so poor old Geoffrey Bucknell was killed. It was very, very sad. Anyway, so we had this bit of line, and I did a bit of patrolling, myself only once, but taking a recce patrol out. But I used to send them out every night down to the river. And I don't think the opposition ever came over the river at all in our sector. They used to shell us occasionally with airbursts, not very effective. But we never saw any chaps up near us which caused us any trouble at all. And then we had a whole company of ROC, Republic of Korean Army chaps, come to us. And they were commanded by Corporal Mitchell Gears, who was a sanitary corporal. And that was known as Army Group 4. About 100 Koreans. They weren't much, they didn't know much about soldiers, and several were too young. We used them as porters. But we did have a lot of people behind us. And I had to go, I was asked by Andrew Mann on one occasion to take the company and go and, he said, rescue a gunner battery that were way behind the lines and were bothered by snipers. And we went along lots of tracks. I took transport with us, and so I had the leading jeep, and I had 2 three-tonners with what was left of the company behind us, and a carrier. And we eventually came to this gunner place. They weren't surrounded by anyone. They were quite happy. And while I was talking to the battery commander, they had very good gun, the Americans had, a field gun. I think it was 112s or something like that, they call them. Excellent. But they were firing at targets that they'd been given by some chap miles away at some headquarters, way up. And they didn't know where they were. They couldn't see any shot fire where they went to, just harassing fire. And they weren't bothered by snipers at all. And while I was talking to this chap and saying, well, you know, you're perfectly all right, there's nothing we can do. And a chap walked out wearing a gunner badge and a blueberry, a captain, and he, oh God, I've forgotten his name, he became a brigadier and a very famous chap, an Irishman, a mad Irishman. And I said, what the hell are you doing here? And he said, oh, I've come from 29 Brigade and I'm learning the business. So I said, well, what are you learning here? He said, oh, I've learned a lot. And I said, what about these snipers? What snipers? He said. So, and I've forgotten his name, dear man. I've subsequently met him many times. Had a very large family, a very keen Roman Catholic. I simply can't remember his name. But it was quite extraordinary to see this British officer suddenly turn up. The battery commander hadn't said to me, oh, we've got a Brit with you. You know, I might expect he might have told me, but there we are. So we returned. But then it got bad on other parts, and I know the second in command took another company down, and they did get quite a lot of POWs in that time. But whereas this battery that I went to relieve help, they hadn't been shot at all. But there were chaps behind us, which was disconcerting. Anyway, we eventually attacked over the Nakhon through a bridge, a kind of floating bridge that the American sappers had put up. And we came to a hill that was peopled by North Koreans. And Andrew did a magnificent, it was an exercise, a Staff College School of Infantry, superb attack on a hill, in which he had the machine guns. By that time we had Vickers again, our machine gun platoon, and our mortar platoon doing pre-stuff. We hadn't got any civilian, any gunner support, which was bad, and that was a very worrying thing. We had our own mortars and our own machine guns, the only support we had. And D Company did the first attack. They had 2 officers killed and, I don't know, 4 soldiers badly hurt, I think. And then when they stopped, I was coming up behind, A Company was coming up behind, and we took the top of the hill, where we found quite a lot of bodies that our machine guns had killed. And then I put the company out on the other side of the hill, and we saw chaps coming down into a big ditch behind us, and we got quite a lot of those as they were coming down. They were only about 300 yards away, if that. And we got quite a lot of those, and then I got the mortars going, we had a marvellous shoot where you saw our three-inch mortars right down into this gully where these chaps were, and you saw bodies coming up when the bombs hit. You know, it was very satisfying. Anyway, we killed quite a lot of North Koreans there, and in my company, unfortunately, we didn't have a single casualty, not a single one. And then we went on this advance where we were doing about 20 miles a day, and mostly in trucks at the time, very small little battles, and with tanks with us, Shermans, and the new, what were they? General Grattan, what's your name?
Centurion?
No, American tanks, Pattons, beautiful controls, marvellous. They were quite good, and we went eventually, we'd done very well, and got to the other side of, well, I can't remember, the kind of North Korean Aldershot. Funny things that happened there, what happened? We were under command of the 1st Cavalry Division, and their commanding officer, who was a big Texan, can't remember his name, who always walked about with a shotgun, he came up, right up to the leading company, and on that particular day, I was leading the advance. And this bloody chap was always over my back, watching what I was saying to the platoon commanders and how we were going to do various things, and I had a troop of American tanks with me. They weren't these Pattons, they were Shermans, yes, well done. And some of them were pretty old, too. They're always breaking down. I said to this general, look, General, why can't you leave me alone? Don't come and ask me why I'm doing things. Let me fight my battle. Oh, he said, okay, if you feel like that. Right. And I said, what's more, why do you carry that bloody shotgun about? He said, you never know, you may see a pheasant. And he was quite right, because there was a lot of game birds up there. Whenever I see a pheasant now, when you shoot, you always call them pheasants. Anyway, I wasn't bothered with him anymore, but I know John Willoughby had a similar kind of row with him. And I can't remember his name. That was the 1st Cavalry Division. And we were doing very well. And then we were taken back to an airfield, and we were flown up in things called flying boxcars. I can't remember. They were twin-engine things with a box kind of back. A bit like our bigger four-engine thing. I can't remember what that was even called. Anyway, we flew up to Seoul. And we landed on the airport, which was lots of wrecked airplanes on it. And I chose as my company headquarters a wrecked C-47, which had a loo in it, which we took off and carried on my Jeep. And the commanding officer was to come and have a crap with us in the morning, which was quite fun. Anyway, we met American Marines there and were given a tremendous party by them. We all got horribly sick on their rye whiskey and peanut butter sandwiches. But they were jolly nice chaps, and I reckon very, very good soldiers, the US Marines. Anyway, the next thing that happened was we were told the great man MacArthur was coming, and he was going to see General Little Tortchavitap, was killed in a motor accident. I can't remember his name. Al something. No matter. We saw this Connie constellation circling, and it landed, and they put out, they've even found a red carpet to put out, and this aircraft stopped, the door flew open, steps came down, and a whole lot of photographers rushed out and turned round facing the door. And there appeared the great man in his I Will Return cap, you know, and he came down the steps, and there was General Al, I'll think of his name, a funny little chap, MacArthur's a big chap, and he grabbed